This is the Auto Supply Chain Profits Podcast, where you'll hear from experts of all facets of supply chain in the auto industry to help you prepare for the future. I'm Jan Griffiths, your co-host and producer.
I'm Terry Onika, your podcast co-host. Let's dive in.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Auto Supply Chain Profits Podcast. Let's check in with my co-host, Terry Onika. Terry, how are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Good. What have you been up to?
Well, last night I got invited to speak to Wayne State University's ERP class hosted by our industry colleague, Lori Sisk. So that was a lot of fun. I am so glad that they're teaching ERP in college now. I mean, it couldn't be more critical to you once you get into your first job. So that was really fun. And then she also had me bring my colleague Sylvia with me to talk about QED Red Zone. So the students were really fascinated with our connected workforce solution. I've talked about it before. It connects the factory floor, allows the workers to have a voice in production. They communicate via iPads. It's just awesome. And it's so good for employee engagement. Actually, when we get done with implementation, they actually have parties. They're so happy with it. Well, it's really a fun solution, and the students enjoyed hearing about it.
That's good. And tonight, I believe that you are joining the Wayne State Supply Chain Advisory Board as its newest member. Is that right?
That is correct. It's my first night joining the group.
And our guest has a little something to do with that board, but hold on a second before we introduce her. So I will tell you that I've been working on the book. Continue to work on the book, because just when you publish a book and you think it's done, oh no, it's not. Because then there's the Kindle version that you got to get out, and then there's the audiobook that you have to get out. So the Kindle version is out and the audio version is on its way. And having to read my own book, oh, that's, it's like, oh, really? I got to read it again? But I did. I read it. And I actually recorded it in a podcast studio because the specifications on an audiobook are really strict and stringent.
Really?
Yes. I was surprised. Yeah, I'm learning a lot. I'm learning a lot. Anyway, let's get to our guests. Because talking about learning different things, one of the things that I actually enjoyed many years ago, I jumped out of the automotive space and worked in the appliance industry for a year. And I think there's so many different things, different perspectives that you can bring to the table. And in automotive, we have a tendency to stay in our lane. And we have a tendency to say, oh, but they don't understand. If you're not in automotive, you couldn't possibly understand. Well, yeah, I got news for you guys. Every single person in every industry thinks that way. And I know, Terry, even though you and I are focused a lot on automotive, we'd actually cross those boundaries and work in other industries. But our guest today is no stranger at the mic. She has joined me at the mic previously, is well known in automotive, is well known in the healthcare field and also life sciences. And today we welcome back to the microphone, Carrie Yule. Carrie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm just absolutely excited to have another conversation with you, Jan, and now with you, Terry. And I'll see hopefully both of you later tonight at Wayne State.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's a party. It's a party.
Yep. It's a party.
So tell us, Carrie, what have you been doing since your days at Magna? And tell us a little bit about that transition.
I always thought I would always be in automotive, Jan. But as you said, sometimes a door opens and you choose to walk through it. And so back in 2019, about 6 months before COVID, I chose to join GE Healthcare and spent 4 years there. And then most recently, I've just transferred over to Danaher, continuing in the healthcare field. So it's been a really interesting last 5 years transitioning from automotive. And I would say all in all, a pretty easy transition. Look, at the end of the day, supply chain. And the issues that face any industry are pretty similar. So, you know, when you think of things that are top of mind for everybody, it's things like security of supply, how to take cost out, how you're going to be a customer of choice, making sure you've got the best talent, what your digital roadmap is going to look like. All of those things have been the same, really, from automotive over to healthcare. So for me, the biggest difference personally was really just getting comfortable with the products being different. You know, I grew up in the auto industry career-wise, so I've been in hundreds of plants, stamping plants, injection molding plants, machining plants, and it just was comfortable, right? So for me, switching over to healthcare and med tech can be kind of different in terms of the manufacturing processes, sometimes even a little overwhelming because it's just such high-tech science. But again, supply chain. So it's been a great transition.
What role does technology play in the life sciences or a medical device area. How is it different or how is it the same?
Yeah, technology for me and supporting business excellence, it's a key thing, right? When I think about the auto industry, technology's always been pretty good. Enabling communications with suppliers, for example, EDI has been around and adopted seemingly forever. A lot of digital tools. And I think organizations like AIAG have been really helpful here, encouraging the adoption of standard processes that are enabled by common technology. I don't see as much of that yet in MedTech and life sciences, but the conversation is happening. Both industries really emphasize lean manufacturing and processes, learning from the Toyota way, right? Focused on continuous improvement. And a lot of times that is supported by digital tools and technologies. But you know what? Other times it's just good old-fashioned whiteboards and dry erase markers. And that's common in both spaces.
I have a question for you. I'm thinking about the technology and I'm thinking about the difference, how supply chain operates in different industries. But there was a point in time when both of those industries came together in your life when you were at GE. Tell us about that.
That was really fascinating because thinking back to building ventilators and needing the world needing us to just do that so quickly. And GE is very strong in that technology, but lower volumes as the healthcare industry typically is. And then now you have these automotive suppliers kind of idled with incredible manufacturing, high volume. It was just an awesome way to see companies come together all throughout the supply chain. And it was just amazing to be a part of. And one of the things that it highlights is the similarities between the industries, right? Very focused on quality, very focused on bringing products to market quickly. It was just incredible. I don't know how to describe it other than that.
You were the perfect person to be handling that from the GE side of it because you knew the automotive so well. So you've got automotive companies coming together with GE, your background had to put you in a very strong position to be able to move quickly because it was all about speed.
It was, and it was good timing, and it really helped to have the network that I had in the automotive industry to know who to call. And I knew I might not get the right person the first call, but they're going to keep connecting us and allow us to move quickly. So it was just terrific and a wonderful example, and not just ventilators. I mean, you saw it collaborating on personal protective equipment and just some really incredible things that were big contributors to global healthcare.
What are some of the key capabilities of supply chain technology that you find most helpful?
I think those of us in procurement, one of the things that is super important now and always is visibility into your supply chain. For example, as of this recording, there was an earthquake last night in Taiwan. And when I woke up to that news, first thing I want to know at the touch of a button is, how might my supply chain be affected? So there's been a lot of progress over the last decade in maturing kind of those third-party feeds for risk. So maybe it could be financial risk feeds. It might be geographical events like this weather event. Those things are really helpful to companies to be able to connect them to your own internal technology. Last week, it was a cargo ship in Baltimore striking a bridge, right? So you really want to know quickly what your impacts might be. And I think technology has a big role to play there.
In the life sciences and medical device industry, do you find the importance of your suppliers as critical in automotive as it is in life sciences?
Absolutely. I think they're both the same. And I think both industries kind of struggle with visibility into sub-tier supply chain. And that's common in automotive, medical, and anything else. I don't think a lot of companies have that right yet. And that's an area where technology really can help us all.
Speaking of tsunamis and what happened with the bridge last week, talk to us about supply chain resiliency. What do you do in that area?
Yeah, it's such a tough topic, Terry. I have yet to see a company who really thinks that they have it right. But listen, you have to start with some kind of scoping. You can't de-risk everything. It's just not possible. So you've got to define what's most important as your place to start. Have a really good method for quantifying revenue impact, for example. If you don't get certain components, you need to know what's common across platforms. So you've probably heard the term the industry uses about the golden screw, knowing what that one part is that is on everything you make. And it might be low revenue, but it's very high impact. So I think you've really got to be intentional about scoping. That's kind of the first thing. And then especially in medtech and life sciences, it's also about the impact on global health, like we were just talking about. So it might not be your highest revenue products, but it's the ones that have the most impact on global health. So you might want to start there. Then I think Once you've kind of scoped your de-risking and resiliency, then it comes down to, what does mitigating risk actually even mean? And it's going to vary by part. It can't be a one size fits all. So sometimes it might just be having a certain level of inventory that solves your problem. Other times you really are going to have to ramp up a second source or a dual source. So knowing your techniques is pretty important. And then I think the other thing that you can get right now, no matter what the current state of your supply chain is making sure your product development process is aligned with building resiliency from the start. So you don't have to revalidate anything. You don't have to change an existing supply chain because you're starting fresh. So really thinking about designing for resiliency is important.
Tell us more about that new program development and new program launch. In automotive, we've got, as you well know, APQP, and we've got very robust and detailed and structured launch processes. Do those processes translate over into your world now in health sciences or not?
No, they do. They do very much, Jan, and I've seen them throughout the healthcare industry. Very robust NPI process. But I think what's missed in automotive as well is what many people call design for X, right? And that X can be resiliency, like we were just talking about. It might be designed for manufacturability. That one's a little more common. People have got that one covered. But the newer ones now are designed for sustainability, for example. So you may have the toll gates and the checklists and the APQP and all of that is there. But really thinking about some of these new topics is still not embedded in those processes across most industries.
Yeah. Well, actually, Terry fixed that. Did you know that? She fixed that. She's got an ebook coming out in a few weeks that really builds in sustainability into the 24 processes, supply chain processes. And it's there. It's all done. It's done for you, Carrie. You're going to love it.
Fabulous. I can't wait to get my hands on it then in a few weeks.
Absolutely. Well, I'd be happy to share it with you. We're really excited about it.
No, that's fantastic. One other thing I would mention on this topic is early supplier involvement, whether it's new product introduction or it's end of life. You really need to be engaged with your most critical suppliers, especially if you're doing platforming, because it's a risk of designing in something that's going to be a very big and expensive problem later. If you don't understand their technology roadmaps and you choose something that's going to be obsolete and you put it on all of your products, or you pick a material on a sustainability watch list, that can be a problem later. So working with your suppliers as part of that NPI process is really important.
Who's better at that, automotive or healthcare?
Ooh, that's a good question. I haven't seen major differences. I think both, that's just something room to improve for sure.
Yeah, I think it's this idea of, we learned many years ago in automotive that at least 70% of the design of the product, or the cost of the product rather, is hooked in at the design stage. Yet we only spend typically about 5% of our resources during that stage. And Carrie, I worked in a system that talked about that in the 80s, in the mid 80s, on a concurrent engineering team that had an early supplier involvement element to it. And honestly, I don't think we've moved too far.
I don't either.
Since the 80s.
I know. And that's why I say I don't think either industry is real good at it. And you know what? It always comes down to the intention is there. But what my experience is, it's snagged with timing. Oops, we don't have time for that. It's too late. We'll miss our deadline. We've got to build that time into the process somehow.
Yeah, it's timing, it's resources, and it's having a process. And that's one of the things I like about Terry's 24 supply chain processes, is it really gives you a bit of a structure to follow. But I know, as a recovering head of supply chain for an auto supplier, that I didn't want to put my resources on it because all our metrics are so focused on cost reduction that I had to put most of my resources on cost reduction or managing supplier issues. The reality is, if you put more resources up front during the design and the development, you wouldn't have all those variances later on when you're launching the product. But it seems like in auto, we'd rather just fight with it later after it's all launched and we got a problem. And then there's an unplanned variance to the financials that nobody likes to hear. But so that's a huge mindset switch. So what I'm hearing is that you've got that in healthcare as well.
We do. The latest catalyst, of course, is COVID, right? There's always something. But first, automotive industry, it's the tsunami. Now we have COVID. there's always something that gets people to say, okay, this time we're really going to do it. Instead, we really are going to do it. And then a year or two later,
flips back.
So I really think we're going to just have to find a way to break through this. And otherwise, we're always going to be fighting fires.
One thing that I'm surprised to see is often organizations still track their suppliers using spreadsheets and they don't have a tool that keeps all of that information. From your perspective, how important are supplier relationship management tools to really understand the position of your supply base and understand each one individual and what they bring to you?
I think it's important for me. You're right. A lot of it is still in spreadsheets. And in fact, for many organizations, even having it as a spreadsheet is a step in the right direction because they didn't have it at all. For me, it's more about going back to that segmentation, really, and understanding which suppliers that you really need to have those strong relationships with and how they're performing. So most companies have thousands of suppliers and you can't focus on all of them. So I think getting that segmentation is right. And then you can really put the effort into developing the relationships.
Carrie, you've spent a significant amount of time in automotive and now a decent amount of time in healthcare. As you look back into automotive, is there anything that we need to unlearn? I know when I worked in the appliance industry, what I loved was the ability to take what I thought was really valuable about automotive and put it into the appliance industry. So I'm sure you've had some of those same thoughts, but as you look back now into automotive, what do we need to unlearn?
Yeah, great question, Jan. You know, the number one thing that jumps out to me, and I knew it when I was in the auto industry, but it's just even more enlightening now, seeing it work a different way elsewhere. We've got to stop treating our suppliers like they're adversaries. Nobody wins here in that model for very long. One of the things I love about the auto industry was Plante Moran's WRI index, right? Or the Working Relations Index. I actually brought it over to one of the healthcare companies to use it there because it's great insight into how supplier relationships matter. Auto industry knows it, but they haven't moved the needle. Healthcare is a lot stronger, I think, in terms of overall relationships, really being partners. So I think the auto industry could take some lessons there. Keeping your word, paying on time, being tough on problems, not people, tackling things together, and really making sure that there's an emotional connection to your products so that the suppliers understand really how their work fits in and how that's valuable. I think the automotive industry could unlearn some of this one my way or the highway and really benefit from some collaboration.
On the food side, what do you feel you brought to your current position from the auto industry that benefits them?
I think one of the big things there is just sort of relentless focus on cost management, quality as well. But the margins are razor thin in the auto industry, so you've got to go after everything. And I think some of that, bringing some of that discipline to healthcare is why myself and a lot of people have been recruited from the auto industry.
Carrie, what is the one action that you would recommend that leaders in the automotive supply chain should take right now, given you've got vast experience, different perspectives, a lot of things that you bring to the table. But as you look to your previous colleagues in the automotive industry, one action that they could take right now that you think would make a difference as we go through this massive transformation in the auto industry?
Yeah, Jan, I feel really strongly about getting supplier segmentation right, really knowing which of your suppliers are most impactful to your business. It's important for a lot of the things we talked about today. Risk management, good NPIs, collaborative cost out, all starts with knowing where to focus and being really intentional about that. A lot of companies put their effort where things are going wrong. Firefighting, we talked about. There's always going to be a degree of that because after all, we're in supply chain. There's a book I really like, an older book. It's called First Things First, What the World's Greatest Managers Do Differently. And it's about managing your employees, but I think it's applicable to this situation with suppliers. One of the key takeaways from the book is that managers should be spending more time with their A players, trying to get out what's been left in, instead of working with C and D players trying to put in what's been left out. Okay. And I think this is true of supplier relationships and where the automotive industry could really get better. Your best suppliers are almost always underutilized in terms of their expertise, their ideas. So I would say for my call to action, spend the time with them proactively at their sites, at your sites. not on a Teams call. Going to Gemba really matters with the right suppliers.
What a perfect way to close. Carrie Yule, going to the Gemba matters. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, I'm very grateful to be on the podcast today. Thank you for inviting me. It's always a terrific conversation with you ladies.
Thank you.
Thanks again, Carrie. See you tonight.
See you tonight.
Are you ready to find the money in your supply chain? Visit www.autosupplychainprofits.com to learn how, or click the link in the show notes below.